Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Hey now, welcome to the Daily Jungle, TGIF. The grind includes Friday. I did my job. The XR4TI did their job. We were prepped for a big show, and then my man, Jeff in San Antonio, called in to wish me a happy birthday, and it took the entire show off the rails when he got just a little bit emotional in reflecting on the big life events coming his way. And of course, you clones killed this guy, because that's what you clones do. And speaking of killing a guy, Adam Hawk, my EP, aka The Sparrow, got into it on Twitter yesterday with Hot Pocket Nation, and the only person coming to his defense was the blue checkmark Hot Pocket account. Then we had three great guests, Jason LaCanfora, Benjamin Watson, and Astros third baseman Alex Bregman right before game one of the ALCS. All of that and Alvy's week that was. So Alvy, roll it right now. So let's talk about what we saw last night, the Nats and the Cubs. Like Cleveland before them, the Washington Nationals went Washington Nationals yet again. Steven Strasburg may have changed his reputation and saved the Nats season, but he cannot change their DNA. This is who they are. This is what they do. Get as close as humanly possible and then find yet another way to lose. And you cannot find a more Nationals way to lose than the way they did last night. Thanks to Strasburg's masterpiece in Game 4, the Nats were able to get to a Game 5. And it was all there for them. They were at home. And they promptly fall behind 1-0 in the first inning. And of course, everybody in Nats gear knew how this would go. Except it didn't. Here comes Daniel Murphy in the bottom of the second.
And now the wind of the pitch. Murphy swung on, trailed a deep right center field. Way back, going, going. It's gone. Goodbye.
Nats radio. Then that was followed up by a pair of singles. And then Michael A. Taylor, who smoked a grand slam in Game 4, came to the plate with a couple of guys on.
1-1 game. Runners first and second. Nobody out. The pitch. Swinging a long drive. Deep left field. Chain going back. At the warning track. At the wall. It is gone. Goodbye. Michael Taylor has done it again. Bang. Zoom. Go the fireworks.
Hey, Nats fans. Both of you. How fired up were you when that went down? A guy with four home runs in the first 2 months of the season just went yard for the second straight game. It could not have been any bigger or any more important. Now it's 4-1 Nats. Chicago chips away. They get it to 4-3. But Dusty Baker turns to his ace, Max Scherzer, in the fifth. And for a moment, it looked like a brilliant move. A manager who never makes good moves with his pitching looked like he made a brilliant move. Scherzer gets Chris Bryant. He gets Anthony Rizzo. But then the Nats went nat. Natitude filled the night. Wilson Contreras, infield single. Ben Zobrist, pinch hit single. And then up came Addison Russell.
The pitch to Russell. He hits a ground ball fair down into the left field corner. Contreras will score. Zobrist coming around third. Cubs lead 5-4. Addison Russell with a two-run double.
Two-run, two-out double, 5-4 Cubs. And as bad as that was, it was about to get even worse. Scherzer falls behind Jason Hayward and then intentionally walks him to get to Javi Baez. Smart move, because he struck out Javi Baez. That's good. Except the third strike got away from catcher Matt Wieters. That's bad. But wait, my man Wieters went all Little League on it and raced to get the ball and throw Baez out at first, only to heave it into the outfield, allowing Russell to score. 6-4 Cubs. And as if that weren't enough chaos from Wieters, Tommy La Stella reached on a catcher's interference, loading the bases. Then Scherzer hits John Jay to bring in another run. 7-4 Cubs. Allow me to recap that for you. The Cubs reach base with an intentional walk, a drop third strike, catcher's interference, and a hit batter. And they scored two runs in the process, all with two men out. And your ace on the mound and at home in an elimination game. You cannot get any more Nats than that. That's as Nat as it gets. Scherzer afterwards admitted it was a punch in the junk.
Just gut punch again. I mean, here we are in game five, play our hearts out. Everybody lays on the line. Everybody's fighting to do everything they can. We lose a nail biter. It just sucks because I just know how hard everybody played. And this game's cruel sometimes.
It is, right? But that didn't stop the Nats from trying. And Jason Worth did a pretty good job when he lost an Addison Russell hit in the lights and another run scored. And yes, there was that weird replay in the bottom of the eighth where Nats catcher Jose Lobaton was safe on first, and then the replay somehow found that he was off the bag for a millisecond, and then he was ruled out. I mean, pretty weird. Pretty weird, and I'm not totally sure how replay should work. I'm also not sure, though, that that's why the Nats lost. It didn't help, but the Nats didn't lose because of that replay. They lost because they're the Nats. Despite all of their natitude, despite all that, they actually clawed their way back in. They got it to 9-8. They had a chance in the bottom of the ninth with Wade Davis chugging past 40 pitches, looking for a 7-out save. Up came Bryce Harper with a chance to tie it with one swing.
Davis sets. Here's the pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. And the Cubs have won this National League Division Series.
Finishing Harper with your 44th pitch of the night is brass. Totally brass. Totally brass. Yeah, I knew you weren't ready for that, Alvy. No way you were pulling that. No way you were pulling
totally
that.
Totally trashed.
No way you were pulling that. It's all right, Alvy. That was kind of unfair. Totally brass.
Totally trashed.
Any of you new listeners know who that is? Any of you guys on staff? Hey, XR4TI, do you know who that is? Hawk, do you know who that is? Let me play it for you one more time. You get
totally
this or you're fired, Hawk. Who do you think that is? You get that or you're fired. Don't help him, Alvin. Play it one more time. Hawk?
Totally trashed.
What do you got, Hawk? Who fed that to you? James Kelly, if you fed that to him, you're both fired. Lawrence Taylor, of course, Sparrow. Anyway, totally brass. Totally brass, or as John Lester put it, quote, "That's a bad mother bleeper, bro. That's a bad dude." Well said, John. Well said. That is a bad mother bleep. An incredibly bad dude. And an incredibly bad end for the Nationals. Again. And yet so predictable. See you next year, fellas. Same time, same place, same result. JLC, good morning. What's up? How are you?
Doing well, Romy. Yeah, I finally looked at our rundown today and saw that you're back in the Big Apple. So look forward to seeing you.
My man, you can't shake me. You cannot shake me. I'll be back.
I'm not trying to.
I'm looking forward to seeing you and the fellas, Jason. Thanks so much. All right, so what did you make of what you saw from Carson Wentz in Philadelphia last night, going on the road on a short week and beating the Panthers in Carolina?
I mean, look, I've been impressed with this kid since his earliest starts. Obviously, things the beginning of last year, it didn't go as everyone expected. I mean, remember, it was all about Sam Bradford there last August, and Wentz was going to come along slowly, and then Howie Roseman got an offer he can't refuse for Bradford after Bridgewater went down, and, you know, there you go. Remember, too, Wentz had an injury, so he had missed a bunch of time in the preseason, hadn't even gotten a lot of backup reps, much less any starting reps. So for him to do what he did last year, with not a whole lot of talent around him, you know, Matthews dropping a bunch of balls and Aguilar not getting open, I was very impressed. And yeah, he's still raw, and you can see, you know, the lack of experience in a lot of ways. But he's certainly a gamer. He's tough as nails. Team responded to him. He brings an energy to the huddle. And he's a guy who on third and long can make it happen for you, can win the chains when he's not supposed to. Go look at what they're doing third and 10 or longer. You know, you should be, you know, maybe 10% efficiency. This guy is pushing 50% in some of those situations in some of these games. And a lot of it comes down to his legs at times. And, yes, he can still be erratic. Some of those sideline throws last night, you're kind of like, ugh. But there's a whole lot of clay there to continue to mold. And for them to go on the road in a tough situation without their left tackle and without Smallwood, who really is sort of a security blanket in the screen game and in the checkdowns and all that, and you know, get out to a multi-score lead in the second half in a short week, you could do a hell of a lot worse than Carson Wentz, and we're going to be talking about him for a long time.
You know what? Jason Lockenfor is an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. So, Jason, Pittsburgh's at Kansas City on Sunday on CBS. The Steelers are coming off that really strange loss to Jacksonville where Ben Roethlisberger threw five interceptions, and then Jason, he said after the game, quote, maybe I don't have it anymore.
Yeah.
What's your reaction to his performance and then how he responded to it?
Well, and then he got really testy with the media when they continued to bring that up, which, come on, dude, when you say that and you're the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers and you know, they've got more Lombardis than anyone, well, not anymore, but they're way up there, you know, it's not just going to go away. And I think he knew that. But look, this is sort of how Ben gets himself fired up to play, right? Like, he creates these sort of hurdles or obstacles or, like, sort of, like phantom opponents, whether it be the extent of an injury or whether it be, oh, I'm going to retire, you know, or whether it even be this, like, maybe I just don't have it anymore. Like, he sets up these straw men who he can then knock down. And that's part of what feeds him. And if you talk to people around that team, they'll tell you that, look, that's sort of always been a little bit of that in him. And everybody knows it, and that's Ben being Ben. And they don't obsess about it. They let it go. What they will obsess over is five picks in a game, two pick sixes, and much less a home game. And he's got a quarterback rating of 59.9 in the fourth quarter this season. That's, with all their weapons and with one of the better offensive lines in football, that's not okay. And they've got to figure that part out. I have a weird feeling about them, Jim. I feel like they play up or down to the opponent. And when you're ready to think they're going to take off, they let you down. And when you're ready to think they're going to let you down, they take off. I think they're kind of dangerous in this spot.
Jason Lockenfor joining us. All right, JLC, San Francisco at Washington this week, which means a reunion of sorts between Kyle Shanahan and Kirk Cousins. How likely is it that Cousins is playing for Shanahan next season?
If that happens, there will be a transaction prior to that. How likely is it that Kyle Shanahan can just sign him on the open market? Based on everything I'm hearing, zero chance. I mean, this guy is continuing to flourish. He's continuing to play quality football. The Redskins, who a lot of people thought were an afterthought before the season started, are right in the thick of it. He's making plays with, you know, Doxson and Crowder and those guys because DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon left the building. And Jordan Reed is still hobbled more times than not. And you don't necessarily know which running back they're going to go with at any given time. But, you know, there they are in the thick of it. You can't give a guy $44 million for 2 years and then let him leave for a 2019 compensatory pick. Redskins are bizarre. Redskins are going to Redskin. But even by their standards, that's impossible. So what I think right now, if you based on what I know, if you made me handicap it, I think they transition him, and that'll be around $29 million next year. And then if somebody blows them away with an offer, yeah, okay, we might be able to do something. But, I mean, if there isn't, and that's the thing. It's one thing to just go sign Cousins for $30-odd million a year. It's another to give up a one and a two and something else to do it. And that's when we'll see if the rubber hits the road and how much Kyle Shanahan values him. Versus, let's face it, they don't have a win. And look at their next three, Washington, Dallas, and then back on the road at Philly. They're probably going to be picking pretty high. Does it make more sense to keep those picks and just go ahead and draft USC or UCLA or Wyoming?
Jason, this is really funny. I mean, we've got a couple of minutes left, and I had so many other things I wanted to ask you about relating to football. But in a couple of minutes, I know you're a huge U.S. soccer fan.
Oh, boy.
Is there anything you would like to get off your chest about Bruce Arena, the players, the pay-to-play system, the lack of youth development, and the U.S. Soccer Federation in general?
Let's not forget the quasi-jingoism about who really is an American and who isn't, and who really plays for the badge and who doesn't, and, oh, Clinsey and Timmy Chandler and Fabian Johnson and John Anthony Brooks. They're not real Americans, you know, the way Michael Bradley is. Well, how many real Americans were on the pitch when they laid the biggest egg in the history of our sporting history? I've ranted a lot this week. I think I've said a lot of what I have to say. I'm going to get a lot of people on my podcast in weeks ahead to explore this further, bmoshow.com. Anything new? I mean, what I would say new, Romy, is who's falling on their sword? Sunil Gulati, go home. Go back to New Jersey. I know your term goes till February. Fall on your sword. Let Julie Foudy or whoever take over on an interim basis and go. You had your time. It is disastrous. You are part of the problem to many degrees. If you want to help get stadiums built and help be a part of, you know, staying on board for the movement to bring the World Cup here in 10 years, whatever, Godspeed. But you got to go. Same with you, Bruce Arena. Go, 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 go. I would love to hear about some much-needed emergency meetings at Soccer House happening sometime in the next couple of weeks with Gatorade and Phil Knight and Anheuser-Busch, all your sponsors, Tab Ramos. If the under-17s are out, bring Hackworth in, your top youth coaches, and let's come up with an actual cogent platform to make soccer truly the game for everyone that it should be, to start reaching out to communities that are being completely ignored, to figure out an approach for MLS that gets more minutes for young American players, because I kind of feel like the league's doing a little bit more for Haiti and Panama and Jamaica, and all that's awesome. And I want to see CONCACAF grow, but you got to get our young players on the pitch there or ship them to Europe sooner, which I still think is really the answer. I'd love to hear about that, but it's been radio silence as best I can tell.
Hell yes. Preach. And Capri Sun, too. Hey, by the way, Bruce Arena is gone, which is good. He quit. The thing is, Jason, before I let you go, everybody's pointing to the fact that when Germany imploded in 2000, they took a long look in the mirror. They did a top-to-bottom analysis and overhaul of the entire way they approached that sport. 14 years later, they win the World Cup. Do you have any hope that the U.S. Soccer Federation has that kind of self-awareness or that kind of interest in such analysis and could actually execute it as well?
I can't even look. We just finished fifth in CONCACAF. Like, I mean, when Germany didn't qualify, it was a tougher group, and we can argue all day long about the travel and the rigors of CONCACAF versus Europe. But, like, I mean, Germany's institutional soccer culture, Germany has, I think I saw this on Hugo Perez's Twitter feed, Germany has like 153 full-time national scouts from the youth level all the way up. We have like eight. I mean, there's so much that needs to be done, but any comparisons to Germany, I can't even entertain that right now. And I do want to say I have tremendous respect for Bruce. That 0-2 run is up there with the 1980 U.S. men's hockey team as the most, you know, memorable, enjoyable, crazy, awesome things that I've ever seen with my own eyes in my life. But it's time for new ideas, not going back to the future. And the problem with Bruce is the first time he would inject some tension. And he was out sort of a bit of an iconoclast, and he would push these guys. The second time, he's rah-rah on the MLS's great bandwagon, and that's going to be his gravy train for the next 10 years. And so what did he do? He kind of relied on those guys, and he played to what Sunil wanted, and this is what you ended up with. So I don't want to in any way slight what he's done for this country. He's been a massive, massive figure. But in 2017, to be going back to him and saying that's going to save it, and the problem is they wouldn't play for Clancy. They didn't play for him either.
Let's go to San Antonio. Jeff in San Antonio. Hey, Jeff, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, I'm great, Rome. It's been a while since I talked to you, man, but I got to let you know, I kind of see through your game. I was listening when Janet had Jake call you on your birthday, and he was talking about the Frisky Kitty, and I remember calling you shortly after that and just really kind of letting you know how cool that was. And as I'm sitting here waiting for my fiance at her appointment for us to deliver our first child, I wanted to let you know that, you know, when you find the one for you, and it's really simple. And when she told me that we were going to name our girl Jordan after 45, I knew she was the one. And she picked the name out, not me. I'm the biggest Jordan honk that you can imagine, but I absolutely owe so much of where I've been in life to listening to your show. And I just wanted to wish you a happy birthday and knock 'em dead like you always do. And I want you to know that you're doing it right, and I want to leave you with this. The last thing that I can ever remember that really moved me in a way on your show was when I think it was Silk called and really kind of gave you props for having a morality and ethics show disguised as a sports show, because it's obvious that that's what you set out to do a long time ago, and you're not going to compromise it. So you haven't been giving yourself enough credit lately. And the last thing that I want to say is lexicon means a lot. I've got the fiance starting to hate the word, allegedly. So props to you, and knock them dead, Rome. War the San Antonio Spurs. War me and my fiance. And war Jordan out.
Wow, bro. That was very heavy. That was very emotional. Jeff in San Antonio. You know, when I took that call and right after I just said, just let the birthday thing go. I'm not that guy. I don't talk about my birthday. I'm not going to let everybody know it's my birthday. I don't call this Rome-tober where we celebrate my birthday for a whole month. I was about to light him up, but I could tell he was pretty emotional about something. So I don't want to drop the hammer on somebody who's that emotional. But then he lays it out, like the fiance, the child. The child's name is Jordan. It wasn't his idea. It was her idea. So that's how he knew he married the right one. He flashed back to when Janet had Jake call the show. I mean, my man was emotional. That was heavy. That was very, very heavy. And already I can see that Twitter is not handling this well. One of my own staffers just asked, is that Marty? That's not Marty, James Kelly. Nick in West Michigan on Twitter asks, is this guy crying? Marty, you're off the hook. Benjamin Watson, let me take you back to Sunday. You had a pair of receptions in the win at Oakland. After a pair of tough losses, how good does it feel then to go on the road, and not just on the road, but across the country, and come away with a nice 13-point win like that?
It was really big for our football team. Going in, we knew we wanted to start fast. I think we actually talked about trying to get a 2-touchdown lead, and that's exactly what happened. We were able to hit some big plays in the passing game early and then get a turnover on defense, and we were playing from ahead, which is always nice when you're on the road. I mean, we've had some long travels. We went to London and then going across the country. But getting a win on the road anytime, but also getting a win on the road in the conference, an AFC win, is always good. So now we're getting ready for Chicago coming in here on Sunday.
You know, it's a really nice win for you guys, but the truth is I like to see you win no matter what, because that means that your teammate, Eric Weddle, who is legendary for his ice cream sundae celebrations, is going to get off. Now, I've seen you encouraging him on Twitter with that. Do you ever dive into any of that ice cream yourself after a win or something as a reward, or is it all clean, burning fuel for you all the time?
I think that, I think he's encouraged me. He's encouraged me to branch out, you know, to let my guard down a little bit and enjoy myself when it comes to the ice cream. One thing I do on Mondays usually is I go by Chick-fil-A and I get a small cookies and cream milkshake with no whipped cream and no cherry. That's how I like it. And that's kind of my celebratory, you know what, you had a long week of practice and it's time to enjoy yourself a little bit. But he cracks me up with that. It doesn't matter what time it is, 2-3 in the morning, whenever we're getting home from an away game, he's going to find some ice cream.
Dude, that milkshake, though, has got to be the best thing in the world, right? How good is that thing once a week as a treat and a reward?
Oh, they're awesome. They're awesome. They're awesome. And, you know, we work hard. We work it all.
Yeah.
You know, everything in moderation.
Absolutely. Benjamin Watson joining us. No doubt about that. Now, the offense maybe has not quite clicked the way you would have wanted to this season, but at the same time, you are 3-2. So how much confidence is there that when the guys do start rolling, this is going to be a dangerous team?
Well, the thing is, in the NFL, you can be 3-2, you can be 1-4, you can be 4-1. And if you look at most of the games that teams play, there's always one or two or three plays that are separating these teams. I mean, it's not like you're 3-2 and you're on top of the world. So you understand that every play matters. And obviously, as an offense, our job is to score points. We want to score points whenever we get the football. I think last week we actually moved the ball fairly well, and we were hoping that continues into this week. But we have a great defense, and our defense has put us in great position time and time again. There's been some times where we haven't been able to capitalize on that, which is tough as an offense because you want to score when your defense is getting 5 turnovers a week and stuff like that. But we also know that there's going to be times where, hey, we're going to have to score points, and they're going to be playing against a good offense that's going to score points as well. So, again, it comes down to execution. We've got a good plan. We've had great plans going into games. But when we get there, we have to be able to execute.
Ravens tight end Benjamin Watson joining us. Now, when you were on this show back in June, we talked a little bit about your recovery from a torn Achilles last season. At this point, do you feel like you're all the way back to where you were prior to the injury?
Well, I feel like there's a new normal. And I've used that term a lot. And I think when you come back from an Achilles, sometimes people say it takes a year, sometimes 2 years. For me, I'm able to run around. I'm able to do everything that I need to do. There's still some things that I can't do, like do a calf raise all the way up on my toes, but I can play in an NFL game. How crazy is that?
Wow, that is. So, that's wild, actually.
Yeah, it really is. And a lot of times you talk to guys and years down the road, and they still can't get all the way on their toes on a calf raise. But they have enough strength to do what the body needs for them to do. And so my biggest thing was to be able to come back, and I'm just grateful to have the opportunity. Just yesterday, we were out here practicing, and the leaves are changing here in Baltimore, and I remember vividly last year being in the training room, doing rehab, looking out of the window of the training room and seeing the guys practicing, and yesterday, I just had a feeling of gratefulness that I'm able to come back and play. I was able to go through that whole year, and God gave me another opportunity to go on the field.
Benjamin Watson joining us. And on top of that, you're now 14 years into an NFL career. Most guys who come into the league don't even make a third of that. So how have you had the kind of longevity? And then what's it mean to you to be not only one of the vets in your own locker room, but around the entire league as well?
Well, I think I was having this conversation the other day. You know, guys that make it for a long time are not necessarily the best players. Sometimes we've had, some good fortune. I've had a number of injuries, but I've been able to come back from them kind of like the Achilles. And there's a matter of discipline. I really credit my family a lot, too, keeping me grounded. My father and mother giving me a huge work ethic, and then having coaches who gave me an opportunity. There are a lot of guys that can be playing in the league, you know, and they aren't for various reasons, whatever may have happened. But one of the things that I love about being at this point in my career is that I'm able to have conversations about life and about football, but really about life with guys in the locker room, talking about fatherhood, talking about their families, talking about different social events that are happening around our country, stuff like that, and seeing it from a different perspective. You know, once you get past 4, 5, 6 years, they start looking at you like an old man. You got a couple gray hairs in your beard,
right.
So they kind of treating you that way. But it's something that I've embraced and something that I'm really cherishing right now at this point in my career.
You know, in reference to some things that are going on off the field, in the summer you were part of a trip with a number of other players to the Dominican Republic to learn about the sex trafficking that's taking place there. When you look back on that trip, what sticks out to you the most? What was that like?
It was, it's one thing to support a cause, and it's one thing to even donate your funds, your money to a cause and to be an advocate for that cause, and it's totally another to immerse yourself and to talk to the people who are really doing the work. And being able to go there and speak with the Dominican Office of the International Justice Mission, the world's largest anti-slavery organization, and seeing them in their daily prayer meetings, and when they're asking the Lord to help them as they fight to bring justice to these perpetrators, and they fight to enact laws and stuff like that, and just seeing their courage and their perseverance encouraged all of us that went. And now looking back on it, we just got great news that one of the cases that we were talking about there was a case of a number of young boys who were in the sex trafficking trade by some men that they knew. They actually got convictions of over 10 years for those men. And to see that kind of come to fruition when there was a time where these people were operating with impunity really, I think, encapsulates the feeling that we all had going there and knowing that, you know what, this type of thing happens not only in the DR, but it happens everywhere. It's happening right under our noses, and it's important for us to be aware of it. And when we can, to advocate for justice for these young women, young boys. There are over 2 million children around the world that are in the global sex trade. And so there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
You know, I'm so glad to hear you tell the fact that they found these guys and they were apprehended, because it's so disturbing and it's so horrible. It's so concerning. And then you start to think, you know, where's the hope? What good can come from this? But you can see that there is. And I mean, as a father, what's it like to learn of some of the things that you learned about when it comes to the exploitation of children?
Well, you know, as a father, I'm a father of five. And I have 3 girls and 2 young boys. And to think that, you know, someone will lure a child away like this, and a lot of times they're crimes of poverty. We also learned about times when a parent may be the person who is pushing their child into doing this because they need the money. And so there's a poverty situation there too that needs to be eradicated. But also, you look at your children and you understand just the incredible opportunity that you have to lead them, to protect them, to guide them. And you want that for other children. You want that for other people. And again, I think that all of us were changed. If you would talk to any of the guys that went, we were all changed. And we also have come back and continue to stay in touch with International Justice Mission, and especially that Dominican office that we went to, because we want to return on another trip. Maybe next offseason.
Good for you. Benjamin Watson, my guest. So let me finally ask you, I'm kind of curious about this. You've got a lot left in the tank. You've got more to give to the game. But from the outside, it seems like you have so many other interests and areas that you can explore after playing football where you can make a real impact. Do you have a sense as to what your life might look like after football?
Jim, I have a sense, but I don't have super clarity right now. That's something that I'm praying for. It's something that just jumps out at me. You're right. There are a lot of things that I feel are important to me. I think that something that's kind of recurred over and over in my life is I want to be an advocate for justice. I want to be an advocate for kindness. I want to be an advocate for righteousness. And those three things are three things that I really kind of filter everything outside of football. I filter my life through that. If I'm going to dedicate myself to something, it's going to fall into one of those three categories. And so hopefully, you know, one thing I've learned about football is, and we've been in four different cities over these 14 years. I've never known which city is going to be next. There have been times when I thought my career would be over and that was it. And then, hey, I got a call and I got a chance to keep playing. And so I do know that when this door shuts, God is going to open another one. And our prayer as a family is that we just have clarity on exactly what that is, and then we attack at full speed like we try to attack everything else.
Alex Bregman is my guest. Alex, so good to have you on. How are you?
Doing great, man. Super pumped. Can't wait to get game one in.
Love that. I love that you're coming on right before game one, too. Thanks so much for that. Let's go back to Monday really quickly before we talk about game one. Boston was up 3-2 in the eighth. You homered off Chris Sale to tie the game. I'm curious, how'd you go about approaching that at bat in the sense that he had thrown you a lot of changeups in the series? What pitch were you looking for when you stepped in against him?
Yeah, my first at bat of the ALDS, I got a changeup from him and I took, and it was kind of in the back of my mind when I was facing him in game four, and I got a changeup 0-0 and kind of got a little anxious and popped it up the center my first at bat. Went back into the video room, was looking at it, and I said, hey, I just need to stay on it a little bit longer. And I was sitting on it the whole at bat and finally got 1-2-1 and was able to stay on it just enough to barrel it up and get it out for the boys.
That's what you did. And it's the kind of moment that every single kid grows up dreaming about and imagining. So when something like that actually does happen in real life, what's that feel like?
Oh my God! Those are the homers that you don't feel. Those are the ones that you hit them, but you didn't really feel it off the bat. It was honestly a dream come true. My mom grew up a big time Yankees fan, so I was always watching the Red Sox Yankees games in the playoffs and watching them at Fenway, and hoping one day I might be able to play at Fenway in the playoffs and to be able to tie the game up for our team and give us a shot to win was pretty special, man.
So, Alex, does that answer the question? Like, I was going to say, what's it feel like when you square one up or barrel one up perfectly? Is the answer it feels like nothing?
That's the answer, man. It really there's no better feeling, but it honestly, it feels like nothing.
Alex Bregman joining us. I get it. I see it working. All right, so the home run, any home run in the postseason special, but when you're on the road and you just tied the game, what did it sound like and feel like in Fenway?
Yeah, so I hit it, and the play, it was pretty crazy. It was packed. The fans were going nuts, and as soon as I hit it, it went dead silent. Like I could hear myself rounding the bases. I could hear my cleats hitting the dirt, and I rounded third, and all I heard was our dugout, and that was it. Really, our dugout was going crazy. Our family section was probably going crazy too, but the Boston fans were completely silent, and it was a pretty cool feeling.
That's a great description. Alex Bregman joining us. Now look, you were an elite prospect. You had a huge season this year. There's no doubt you belong in that clubhouse. They need you. But at the same time, when you hit a clutch home run in the postseason, like the one you had on Monday, do you feel like now you belong now even more than ever?
Yeah, for sure. When I first got called up last year, I got off to a slow start, and you don't really feel like a part of the team until you actually help them win a game. So until you start playing well, you kind of feel like you're on the outside. But, yeah, that definitely it was pretty cool to have Justin Verlander, a guy with such a decorated career, out of the dugout, fired up for you when you hit a home run. So it was pretty special, and it makes you definitely feel like a part of the team and a part of what we got going on here for the future.
That had to feel great. I would imagine, I'm not there, but I would imagine that there's nobody in that clubhouse who doesn't really respect Brian McCann. And Brian McCann, when asked about you, said, quote, he's light years ahead of a regular 23-year-old. He shows up every day, and you know what you're going to get out of Alex Bregman. He loves the game of baseball probably more than anybody I've ever been around. He owns the moment. I mean, that's an amazing thing for a guy like that to say about you. What's it mean to hear that? And then when he says that you love baseball more than anybody, what's the game mean to you?
It's super special to have a guy like that say that about me. And, you know, our front office did a great job of getting some veterans to lead this team. And Brian and Carlos Beltran and Josh Reddick have done a great job and actually turned this team into a World Series contender. And it's been pretty special to see what they've done from the leadership standpoint. And, you know, like you said, Brian McCann has had such a great career, and to have him say that I love the game that much is the truth. It really is. And I wake up thinking about it and go to bed thinking about it, and I just try and improve and try and take as much as I can from those veteran players.
You know, what an amazing clubhouse. And then you've got Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa. You mentioned Verlander. What about Beltran? Carlos Beltran, everybody loves to play with him. What's it like to have that guy in the clubhouse, to be able to pick his brain, play alongside him? What's it like to play and work with him?
Oh, he's been huge, not only for me, but for everybody in that clubhouse, especially guys like Correa, Altuve. And Carlos Beltran shows up to the field every day, and he still treats it like he hasn't played for 20 years. He treats it like he's still got stuff to learn, and he gets after it. He goes into the video room. He works on his craft. He brings all of us into the video room and sees if we can find anything that we can fine tune with our game, or if he can see any little tip that the pitcher has. He's very smart and one of the most brilliant baseball minds I've ever been around.
Astros third baseman Alex Bregman getting ready for game one joins us for a couple of more moments. Now, I got to ask you about the World Baseball Classic. Everybody that I've spoken to from Team USA has raved about the experience. What kind of thoughts do you have when you look back on it?
Yeah, it's definitely cool. It was my fourth time playing with Team USA. I played when I was younger for the 15-year-old team and the 18, and then in college as well. So it was a it was a blast for me to be able to represent our country again on that stage. And of course we won the gold medal, so that makes it a lot better. But no, it was great being able to play with guys that are perennial all-stars and try and pick their brain and learn as much as I can from them. And yeah, it was fun.
Alex, you're from Albuquerque, which is a city that has always been very special to me personally and to this show. What was life like in Albuquerque, and what's it mean to be representing that city on the big stage?
Oh, I love being from New Mexico, man. I go back there during the off season, and we all the guys that play pro ball get together and work out. There's a few of us. Actually, Ken Giles, our closer, is from Albuquerque as well. So I know Albuquerque's watching, and they're fired up that the Astros are doing so well. So it's pretty special. It's a small group of people that play professional baseball from Albuquerque, but it's a tight-knit group, and we root for each other.
Great town. I love it. Game one, New York at Houston tonight, 8:08 p.m. Eastern. Alex Bregman, my guest. Alex, I know it's a huge day. Really appreciate you coming on the day of the game. Thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me. Appreciate it. Go Astros. Let's protect the home field.
Welcome to the jungle. A very good Monday to you. My name is Jim Rome. Hope you had an awesome weekend. What a wild, wild weekend of sports. I mean, I've got enough material for a week of shows, and I'm probably not going to get to much of it because of a video that popped up online last night.
The Bolivian marching powder.
Oh! From a Dolphins office, no less.
Yeah! Miss you.
You know, I've always said that sex is undefeated. Combine sex with the Bolivian marching powder. You're not going to come within six touchdowns of that beast. Win.
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 You're not going to score. You're not going to be within 10 touchdowns of that.
Otherwise, you would not do something like that.
Sam Farmer is my guest.
Now, that was bizarre. Couldn't believe it. It was like a parody.
Hit the road,
obviously
Dak.
Not surprising that he resigned, but alarming to watch a video.
Emailed.
That sounds like an F-14 Tomcat.
God.
Maverick. Maverick.
Damn it, man.
Get your ass in here!
Leaping great yeah. Devontae!
Yeah. All sorts of problems, and they still found a way to get it done. You cannot leave Aaron Rodgers that much time.
Amazingly incredible.
Because that right there is some kryptonite. Morgan Burnett joining us. Devontae Adams came back from that brutal hit.
To be honest, it really didn't shock me because, I mean, Devontae is a very tough guy. We're looking forward for him to do big plays like that throughout the season.
Beckham is down and hurt. Grabbing his
this
left
year,
ankle,
if something can go wrong, it will go wrong with the Giants. And trust me, they're going to screw this thing up by winning a game or two. 1-15 is the biggest waste of time ever. 0-16 is forever.
And may the wet fire you're building out of your pop-up trailer be done in time for the reception, Daniel.
You can never, and I mean ever.
I can't lie to you. I'm sneaking peeks over to see what Gwyneth said about Harvey. I don't even care about that crap normally. I don't. That's just not my thing. That's not where I live. That's not what I do. Harv's not having himself a real good week. Scumbag, of course not.
Email.
The best part of the game was when Luke grabbed the lightsaber from Ray, signed the nerds who watch football for the first time ever.
Sometimes
down he goes. He cannot move.
Sam Bradford looked like he was playing football for the first time ever. What is that guy doing out there?
Dodger baseball.
Tom Verducci is my guest.
You combine that talent with a grinder's attitude. Yeah, they're super dangerous right now. I thought that was the most overrated, overanalyzed losing streak I have ever seen.
Tom passed the Verducci to the left-hand side. My man was about the only national talking head that was giving us any kind of shot going in.
Christian Wilkins is my guest.
You know, I'm just a funny guy or whatever. You know, I try to, you know, always have a good time with everything.
James Franklin.
Jim, I almost think you're messing with me. Christian Wilkins, we recruited the heck out of him at Penn State. Came down to us in Clemson. You and Dabo are messing with him.
That's
funny. Christian Wilkins.
The whistle. It's done. It's over.
If I cared about soccer, I'd be embarrassed. I'd point out that in a must-win game, the U.S. showed up flat and lethargic. This wasn't even Ghana. If I cared about soccer, I would say it's time for a hard reset. If I cared about soccer, I would think and say all these things, but I just don't.
Email.
Layoff Team USA. That TNT squad is dynamite. Yours, AC/DC.
Dynamite.
In the fight. War Eminem.
Fantastic Four.
Doc Rivers.
What's going on? It's been a while. Man, he used to mumble under his breath when you took him out. Warriors don't rest. Warriors don't rest. Sign of weakness.
Cliff Kingsbury is my guest. So how different are you now as a head coach than when you first took over there?
Pretty dramatic. I think when you first get the job, you're just trying to keep your head above water. All the processes you install are just what you've learned from the previous staff.
Yankees win.
Why does this keep happening to this team? Year after year, decade after decade, just can't finish. Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed.
Duck, duck, goose.
Adam Thielen joining us. Duck, duck, goose, or a game of duck, duck, gray duck.
I didn't have a clue that anybody called it goose until I got to college, so it was always duck, duck, gray duck.
Gerard Gallant.
You know, the next day we found out at about noon that there was nobody on our staff that was affected by it. We were very fortunate, and everybody loves country music. We wouldn't have played that night. Probably a lot of our guys, even myself, probably would have been there. It was tough.
So you can call him the Grump, or you can call him Rob G in the CLE.
Rome, what's up? It's good to be back. I haven't talked to you in a while.
Probably not since that rap.
I cut down all the trees in the jungle so you couldn't breathe. I cut down all the trees in the jungle. This is what I have to say about the rap of my past in Cleveland losing. The cure for pain is in the pain, and I'm moving to Boston.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Lawrence, are you proud of yourself? Because now you're the leader in the clubhouse for the worst voicemail ever. And I'm not sure anybody is going to catch you.
Corey the Font Man here.
Email. Thomas the Goat Dolby, and of course, Van Freaking Smack. War Romy's birthday. Unwar kids with summer birthdays having to celebrate their birthdays all on the same day before the end of the school year.
Happy birthday, Dad.
JLC.
Sunil Gulati, go home. Go back to New Jersey. I know your term goes till February. Fall on your sword.
Jeff in San Antonio.
The last thing that I want to say is props to you and knock them dead, Rome. War the San Antonio Spurs. War me and my fiance.
All you jackals. Stand the hell down.
My buddy's name is Jim Rome.
Now all I care about is beating the Raiders and the Broncos.
Yeah, Randall.
Bruh.
Silk.
Bruh.
Silk.
Bruh.
Silk.
Bruh.
Silk.
Bruh.
Silk.
Bruh.
Silk.
Bruh.
Why the hell would they put two pockets in a box if you're not meant to eat them all?
Half pocket.
Small cookies and cream milkshake with no whipped cream and no cherry. That's how I like it.
Alex Bregman.
Super pumped. Can't wait to get game one in.
Bad news. Richard.
Hey, Jim.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Are you kidding? For you?
Johnson, Cox, and Smallwood.
Circumcise them like a mosquito.
Can I do this? I hope my nuts are warm.
Babe Ruth's bunion.
Go Cyclones.
Go Stros. Let's protect the home field.
Yes, indeedy.
Do you know what that is?
What?
A strip club.
Yeah.
Good night now!
Clones, thanks a million for listening. Remember to check me out on the NFL Today on CBS on Sunday, and then be ready for another Jim Rome podcast next Tuesday. You have yourself a great weekend. See you next time. I'm out.